At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Mental Health Today Show. My name is John Cordray. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I'm really delighted that you are here today to listen to this episode. If you or someone else has experienced trauma in your life and maybe talk therapy, traditional therapy, just wasn't quite enough, and you didn't know, is there anything else out there to help me work through and process the trauma in my life? And so I'm really excited. You have something that's coming up that I think would be really beneficial to you. My guest today is Stefano Johnson, is a licensed clinical social worker, and we're going to be talking about a really interesting therapeutic model called critical memory integration, or CMI. It's asking the question, what if talk therapy for trauma isn't enough? Welcome to the show. I am so excited that you're here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here too. I love talking to other fellow clinicians that are doing the work.
Yeah. Favorite. Well, just talking with you about this this approach is really intriguing to me because I talk to a lot of clients. I've been a licensed therapist since 2007, and I have a full-time practice now. So I've talked to a lot of people who struggled and suffered with trauma. And, you know, not every therapist, not every technique or approach is going to help. And so I'm always interested in learning more about another approach to helping people who are struggling with trauma. But before we get there, I want to know a little bit more about you. Tell me a story. Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you get involved in this work?
I have, you know, it's like serendipity, things that happened that kind of led me to this path. But in terms of CMI and discovering everything that's underneath, I think the biggest factor that probably contributed was growing up, there was a lot of childhood adversity, from poverty to, you know, abuse and first generation Mexican American. So I didn't even speak the language, you know, being a foreigner, all of these things. But primarily, one of the things was I grew up in a cult. So my parents were very religious and I was not allowed to wear dresses. I had to wear dresses. I was not allowed to wear pants, was not allowed to do the things. I was kind of tomboyish. You know, I really wanted to do what my brothers were doing. And I couldn't fit the mold of what they thought a lady should be. So it's not just the Hispanic aspect, but also we're supposed to be submissive and subservient to males and all of these things that were drilled into my head, aside from the experiences of trauma that didn't match what they were telling. And it was a church that was like all fire and brimstone. You're not allowed to read or listen to anything that's outside of it. So, you know, the very definition of what a cult would be. And I really realized now that throughout my childhood, there was things that I noticed that didn't feel aligned. I didn't realize that that's what was happening, but something didn't feel right. But I was forced to push that down because as a kid, you have to do what your parents do. You know, you can't like just move out. You got to like at 5 years old and decide this life ain't for me. So we now know those as signals, but there's something in me that did not match what I was being forced to be, what the environment was, you know, as a human being. Of course, my nervous system had to respond a certain way. My behaviors adapted to the environment. So as a kid, I had a lot of anger issues. I was a happy kid, but also very angry kid. So don't mess with me. I would fight. And as I grew up, that just didn't align. I didn't want to hurt people. But also everything was hellfire and brimstone. So we were the chosen ones. Everybody else is burning in hell for eternity. And something didn't sit right because I really love people. And so there was all of these things that I realize now have really informed my understanding of healing is more alignment and authenticity versus targeting all the experiences. Like the experiences were there and they shaped my responses, how I adapted. But even if I tried to diminish that, it didn't quite reach, right? So like as I grew up and I learned how to hold my tongue, how to not fight, you know, not get arrested, like that, those are like very basic skills. It didn't mean I was at peace, because it's still like I would hold it. Now I swallowed it and now I didn't know why. What do you do with this feeling? And I think that over time, as I worked in this field, I mean, I've always specialized in trauma. That was just my calling, I feel like, since 2001, when I got into this field. It felt like a lot of our approaches were incomplete. You know, you could teach me how to manage this, how to stop myself from doing that, how to regulate this thing, but why does it keep coming up? And why do I feel guilty walking away? But then I also feel guilty after I do something that I shouldn't have done. So all of those conflicts definitely, I realize, have impacted how I view the work that I do with individuals and how I perceive mental health to show up. Because when you're not congruent with yourself, it's like living with a person you don't really care for, you know, in the very tight mm-hmm. space. And of course it feels panicky. Of course it feels stressful, because you're around you 24 hours a day, you know. So I think that was a big impact. Yeah.
Yeah. That's an incredible story. We can say that there's some trauma involved in that in your childhood and upbringing.
And you know, we read about the ACEs score, and I knew mm-hmm. I had ACEs. I never manifested the symptoms of PTSD. So despite having multiple ACEs, I didn't have the nightmares. I didn't have the flashbacks. I didn't have the avoidance. In fact, I'd confront and purposefully go towards the things that scared me, sometimes to a reckless point. And so I didn't fit that like conventional definition mm-hmm. of PTSD mm-hmm. and was overall functional. I mean, I, you know, successful in terms of career, I guess, when you look at subjectively. But it was about, I realized later, like more the authenticity and understanding. And I know as clinicians, we're supposed to like do our work. But what does that look like when there's this book that tells you what the problem is? You know, if you have anxiety, depression, I wasn't demonstrating any symptoms, despite the fact that I had, you know, the physical abuse, emotional abuse, domestic violence, poverty, you know, assaults, like all of these things, you check. I think the piece that maybe I could recognize was definitely like the anger, the protectiveness, the reactiveness. But even that I was able to manage. But it's the sense of self. How I view myself, truly accept the self. That's when it becomes a problem. And I noticed that with my clients too, when I started working with individuals. And I don't know how you perceive it, like as my job as a therapist, I'm like, okay, this individual has nightmares, flashbacks, right? If they panic, if we can reduce this, no more panic, no more flashbacks, no more nightmares. You're healed. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's our checklist. And it just feels incomplete. Because as I stayed in the field longer, then I would be able to see people return or come back with another issue. And I started noticing there was patterns. It's almost like they resolve this, but then they put themselves in the exact same scenario that would cause the same thing again. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you stuck in these cycles? And they know, you know, here that that's not mm-hmm. healthy. So then what is driving you? Because then people feel guilty. They feel ashamed. Clinicians get judgy and they're like, well, I'm not going to do more work than you are. Or, you know, we get mm-hmm. frustrated. Like, what are we doing that's not working? And to me, that was kind of the driving force to look for something different.
Yeah. And you mentioned ACEs. And I wanted to just to clarify what that is. That's adverse childhood experiences. And that's something that I used a lot when I worked in the school district a few years ago to identify kids with the most severe trauma. But I also like how you brought up that sometimes trauma for somebody doesn't always fit that clinical definition per se, but it doesn't mean or doesn't identify it as any less trauma. It's just different.
And if you think of trauma as an injury, right?
Right.
I would say anything that causes a response that is not congruent with your authentic self could be traumatic. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. where it gets confusing, because you could have somebody who never had any of those adverse responses, mm-hmm. but their parent was a doctor and they grew up, they were forced to do, you know, focus on education, and they wanted to be, I don't know, you know, a forest, like live in the forest and not have education, but they can't. It's not acceptable because that's not successful. Is that a trauma? I've never seen that on any ACEs mm-hmm. or questionnaire mm-hmm. or assessment, but that could lead to a miserable life. You're not living authentically yeah. to you. You're yeah. not going to be fulfilled in this life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine there's a lot of people who are listening to this that fit that profile of, yeah, this affects me now as an adult, but I can't explain it. And I don't fit in a nice, neat box, but it still affects me. And yeah. maybe people who are listening have tried the therapy. They've tried different techniques. They tried CBT, EMDR, you know, the list goes on. And it might help to some degree, but it may not be lasting help, like you mentioned. And so I'm really interested in learning more about the critical memory integration that you mentioned. And, you know, obviously you, not only are you a professional and you have a lot of training and experience in trauma, you also have lived experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I thought, might as well capitalize on this, you know, if I'm going to have this type of life, might as well like make some money or something off it.
That's right. Well, but there's some really authenticity that comes with that, because you're not someone just saying, you know, reading a list or you're not reading a definition or, yeah, this is really great. But you're being able to say, hey, I know what it's like. I know it's painful. It's hurtful. And I know what happens and the symptoms. So you have a lot of authenticity here to be able to share that with your clients. And so let's shift gears just for a moment and let's talk about the critical memory integration. How is that different than, let's say, traditional talk therapy?
So I would say probably the main difference between that and any, because there's so many amazing modalities out there, and I don't want to ever like diminish the mm-hmm. the importance of being aware of those or having access to those, because sometimes, you know, there's certain things, certain responses that we need to use some of those approaches to extinguish or to decrease so that we can do the work. And what integration, the difference between integration and desensitization is that in desensitizing, you're turning off anything that is alerting, that is disturbing to you in the now. So if you're having flashbacks, if you're thinking about an event really causes like panic, it's great to desensitize it, but it's almost like pulling the battery out of an alarm, right? And it stops being bothersome. The problem is that the way our brain works is that it is like a prediction machine. So it takes the references of your experiences, not what you learn in a book, not what you've talked about, but your experiences. And it uses that as a reference point on how to navigate the world, how to interpret relationships, how to interpret connections, how to interpret yourself, your view of self, and events, experiences, everything. In Spanish, we have a saying, cada cabeza es un mundo, which is every head is its own world. And essentially, it's all those neural networks and neural pathways that have been formed over the years of being in existence, of being a human, that create your perspective for how you see the world and your experiences. When we talk about trauma, we assume that it has to be an adverse event that is causing the problems. And that's not necessarily true. So with TMI, first of all, you notice it's not like trauma memory integration. It's critical mm-hmm. memory integration. Why? The difference between those experiences and the typical experience is that our brain kind of has a hierarchy for how it learns things. You know, number one, if you could die, it's going to definitely remember. You only have to like experience that one time. Number two, if there's a strong emotion component, it's going to recall that. And then number three is the repetitive stuff, repetition, brushing your teeth or things, you know, language, we repeat words. But you cannot outcompete that third level. You can't outcompete the first level, something to do with survival, with this third level of learning. it's a lot of repetition, it might kind of diminish those responses. And I would see this a lot when I worked in residential treatment, as so long as the environment is supportive of that. So I have now learned that my reactive response of wanting to punch someone in the face is not appropriate. It's not acceptable. You know, it's not socially okay, or it's frowned upon in most states. But as long as the environment supports that, I feel like I have agency. I have control. The moment that I feel threatened, that goes out the window. And it's that primitive, you know, that some people call it the primitive part of the brain. It's just your survival mechanism is going to take over. Why? Because survival will always trump everything else. That's where people had issues. That's where I saw these patterns with kids that did fantastic for a year. They graduated, and then a month later, they're in prison for murder or for assault, because we never got to how that programming started, right? So those experiences could have been either traumatic, or sometimes some of you may struggle with like people pleasing, and you get frustrated with yourself because I keep doing the same thing over, and I know I should set boundaries, and I put myself in these situations. At some point, that response protected you. It kept you alive. But the response itself might not be qualified as a trauma, right? It's a pattern. That is what we call a critical memory. A critical memory is just data that is stored somewhere in your neural networks, whether it's in your brain or your body, and it's dictating or controlling your responses. And it often lies beneath your conscious awareness. You don't even realize that you're doing that out of survival, because it might have started even like when you were very little. And so when we're talking about critical experiences, this can go far beyond, you know, our long-term memory forms at about three quarters or something like that, right before we turn four, way before that. So anything related to attachment, how we relate to people, you know, if we have the anxious attachment or all of those things, all of that qualifies as a critical memory. And with CMI, we're not assuming where the problem is. So when we use logic, we think, oh, well, you must do this because you were assaulted in 95, or because your father was an alcoholic, or whatever it is. We're letting the intelligence of the body and the mind guide us. So those incidents may have been truth, but the issue may have lied in the fact that mom was present and didn't protect you, and there was a relational trauma there. That isn't necessarily quantified on our assessments, right? They don't put the, but that might be what holds the key, mm-hmm. not the actual adverse event mm-hmm. or how we adapted, right? So that's kind of what differentiates it. Number one, we're not assuming where the problem is. Number two, the goal is integration, not desensitization, which means we're doing the opposite of desensitizing. We're learning to explore it. We're learning to follow those signals, not make them go away, because they hold very, very valuable information. They hold the key to connecting and fully being our true authentic self.
Yeah, I think that's really, really a good point, that the trauma itself, it could be a perception, or it could be, I hesitate to call it a sideline, but as far as we have a list, it must be the dad, that the alcoholic dad, but we might miss the fact, yes, that's the event, but the actual trauma comes from mom wasn't there to protect me.
Yeah. Or disconnect. I would call it a disconnect.
Okay. Disconnect. Yeah.
Disconnected. That's mm-hmm. why integration is the opposite of segregation, and segregation mm-hmm. is disconnection, right? So integration is connection. Connecting to what? Like yourself, your true self, your authentic self, the parts of you had to betray for the sake of survival.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Yeah. Well, I know we had talked too. You mentioned that this, you do a lot of training on this model, and you have been talking to first responders. Tell me a little bit about how do you use this model and how do you train non-therapists?
So, with this? You know, when we look at, and I'm a big like Gabor Mate fan. I don't know if you're familiar with Gabor Mate, but he talks about the trauma being the disconnection. That's the issue. So it's not the event. It's not what happened because you're already on the other side. It's what happened as a result, like within you, right? So it's the disconnection. When we approach an individual who's disconnected, we have to be connectable to be effective. If somebody's really agitated and I approach with fear or agitation, it's only going to add, right, to the crisis. And so what was beautiful, the group that we had trained is their behavioral health unit for the police department, which is already like amazing that they're doing that.
Yes.
But the question was, you know, they received all of these tools from extensive training, but it's how can we be more efficient? How do we connect? How do we get people to feel like, understand that we're there for a different reason? We're not there to try to throw them in jail. We really want to help. How do we do that? And so I took some of the concepts of CMI in terms of how we show up, the memories that are integrated or not integrated. So if I have something in my past where maybe I was assaulted or, you know, something like that happened, my nervous system is using that as a reference point. And as therapists, we talk about this transference, counter transference. They have an alcoholic dad. Maybe I had an alcoholic dad and now my spidey senses, you know, kick in and something happens. But this is how humans work. And so until we integrate that experience so that our brain is aware that that data is outdated and we're now in a different situation where we are safe and we do have control, if we haven't connected those pieces and our subconscious mind needs to understand that, not just consciously, but from the depths of the subconscious mind, it has to have those puzzle pieces connected so that the response is coming from data that is more accurate to the now, not back then. Then we can approach and I can see, well, you know, little Sally here that's really struggling, that isn't my mom, even though my mother had the same issues or whatever it is. So my nervous system, this is all happening subconsciously, does not activate as a potential threat, which means that by me being regulated, I can approach this situation. And then Sally's nervous system is reading off of mine and it can feel if I'm safe or not. All this stuff is happening underneath our conscious awareness. And if we don't understand that, then we're going to come and I tilted my head. I used a soft tone and she said, F off. You know? Well, yeah, but what was happening internally? Well, I did everything that I was told out here, but our bodies are more intelligent than that. Think about it. You ever walk into a room and you're like, something fishy's going on around here. You didn't see anything. You didn't hear anything, but you could tell two people are standing complete opposite of the room. You're like, either they're fighting or they're hiding something, or it's just a feeling. And we don't give that feeling enough like respect or do, because that is our intelligence. And until we understand that, we'll keep ourselves in these loops where we're being reactive, where we're doing everything right, but something deeper is like driving us, or it's just not matching. We're not getting the outcome. So yeah, with individuals like that, helping them understand how these critical memories impact how we show up, you know, giving them tools on how to use the knowledge, the understanding of the brain, the nervous system, people's understanding how they perceive, you know, their perception, and working within that reality, that requires us to understand our own. And it's really hard to do. You think it's easy, but I don't know how many cultural competency classes you attended, John, but it wasn't until I moved to Japan. If somebody would told me, what is it like to be American? We eat hot dogs and hamburgers. I don't know. Like, I'm Mexican American, so it's a little bit different, but it was until I lived over there that I truly experienced the difference in our cultures, the things that are hard to just articulate or identify. Right? I felt it. Like, that is sometimes until you're in that, you really understand, oh, this is how I see the world. This is how I interpret respect. This is how I believe, like, respect. Everyone can say that that's a positive trait, that all humans want to be respected. But you go over there and try to shake hands. Mm-mm. You don't touch each other. You know, you don't make eye contact. A sign of respect is you bow, you look down. And that was weird for me because someone not giving you eye contact here, we're used to it. You know, we're used to shaking the hands and touching, and as Hispanics, forget it, you know, kisses on the cheek, hugs, like that's standard. And that was very, you know, yeah, that's like, no, Japanese culture. I loved it over there. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But those are things that we don't even know that we don't know mm-hmm. that impact.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's fantastic that you are using this model to train others, like the first responders. I think it's fantastic that the police, a lot of police around the nation, have their own mental health unit.
Yes. Personally,
I have a nephew, and that's exactly what he does. He's an officer, but he's on the mental health team. And so he responds to help people who are struggling, and he responds with empathy. And so this type of training, I think it's amazing. And I would love to see more and more first responders learn more about this.
I agree. And you know, John, I'm giving you this exclusively because it just happened a couple weeks ago. I'm a trauma therapist. I preach awareness. I help people with awareness. And I do pretty decent taking care of myself. But a couple weeks before that training, I got pulled over. Hadn't been pulled over in like 3 decades. But I was frazzled. I was running late to a morning appointment, and I deserved it. I mean, dude should have given me a ticket, but he didn't. And it was interesting how things went down. The client that I was seeing that morning has been diagnosed for like the 5th time, you know, with mm-hmm. cancer. And as clinicians, we care. We do care. I know mm-hmm. we have to pretend mm-hmm. like we don't care as much as we do, but we do. And that morning was very heavy for whatever reason. I hadn't seen them, and I was, you know, really looking forward to seeing them. And then I have ADHD, so I don't know what happens. I get time warped, and I'm running late, and I'm so mad at myself for being late. So of course I took that turn a little too fast, and whoop whoop, you know, there we go. I'm like, this is what I needed. But first the guy was like, you've been drinking or smoking? I'm like, nah, this is my baseline, man. I just like this whole thing. But it was very interesting in that moment. This individual, he had every right to just ticket me to say, hey, you did this, and this is what the consequences. But for whatever reason, he paused and he looked at me and he said, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And it was something about the way he questioned that I like kind of sat back and I thought, actually, I'm not, you know, like there's something I said, I'm okay, but yeah, I guess I'm kind of stressed. And I didn't realize that, you know, that, and he asked what you do. And I'm like, well, I'm a mental health professional, you know, just so ironic, but you know, he made sure I didn't have warrants or anything. And then he came back, he apologized. He's like, I didn't want to make you late. I'm like, no, I deserved it. But he stopped and he said, you know, we're all human. And we all struggle sometimes, and we need each other. Like, we need to support each other.
Wow.
And he looked at me, he said, do you have someone to talk to? I was like, I don't want to be crying on my way into session, you know? Just like, what are you knowing to me, officer? But it was this connection.
Yeah.
It was so powerful. And I realized in that moment, because I had been angry with myself for being late. It was something about the way he spoke and interacted, and the compassion that he showed me that reminded me to be compassionate to myself. And I said, why are you angry with you? Like, you're dysregulated because you care. Why is that a bad thing? It's not a bad thing. And that it just completely pivoted everything. Like, I just felt that calmness and that, you know, and then I thought the irony, I was like, I'm going to tell your buddies about this because I'm supposed to train y'all about staying regulated.
That's great. That's a great story. Yeah, thanks for that. Well, I also want to point out that the critical memory integration is not just for first responder. That's not, but you're able to train first responders. Who would benefit from this technique? And then the next question is, is there a way someone can reach out to you to learn more about it?
Yeah, so, you know, I would say all humans do, because what we took is everything that we've learned across our, you know, years of experience, what we've observed, and not just as professionals, but as humans ourselves, like what is missing, what is it that we need, and really went on a search to uncover truth, uncover what is the most organic way that human beings digest experience, process information, how memories impact our emotion response, all of these things. So, you know, we started off with forming the approach, which is CMI for clinicians, to know how to help individuals, which has been fantastic. I mean, clients that come in, I don't need to hear their story. They oftentimes, whatever they're stuck on, even with active flashbacks, it connects to something underneath. Like oftentimes, maybe there was a fear of being alone. And so now later on, they go through this experience and that's what caused them to get stuck on this thing that they already survived, but their brain can't digest it because there was something that was missing, right? So I see that. And I got so excited in seeing that with the clients that I serve. But more so, I mean, I've done presentations for organizations. You know, we created a program for a school for foster adoptive kids. I've done some with the city around here, like their DEI department, which now they actually have me scheduled to do one for the community. Because I think these tools are so important for all humans. So depending on where you are, so whether you work with an organization and you think, hey, how can we get the stress level down? How can we get people to find more fulfillment in themselves? How they perceive each other. So foster more compassion, not just for others, but for the self. Because without the self, that's not compassion without integrity is just a reactive response, right? It's trying to create a facade. It has to include the self. When it includes the self, it's got integrity. It's more solid, right? You look at things different. You see people struggling and you don't personalize it. You recognize that they're struggling. So it sounds, you know, a little extra, I guess, to say all humans can, but yeah, that's kind of the goal. That's why I'm doing this differently, is that if we can get officers to interact with humanity differently, and I'm not saying there aren't the outliers. Trust me, I worked in residential. There's a couple kids that I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a serial killer. You know, just there are individuals that, but they already know how to deal with that, right? But the majority of people, when we seek to understand, we can be more effective. And then we can make a difference in our communities. And if you want safer schools, you want safer communities, you want the world to improve, you want more freedoms to feel free, then we have to understand what leads to the things that make it feel unsafe, make it feel constriction, you know, that put instill fear. And we have to work from that angle. And so working with, you know, kids in the foster system, I figure if we could do early intervention and we can teach them to connect to themselves, to view themselves differently, but it requires adults who are not demanding outcomes, right? It requires adults that can truly connect and learn to love or accept someone unconditionally from where they are, so that the individual can become curious about how they respond and what truly is them and what is an adaptive response. So it's this whole piece of, some of them are just, it's new, you know, CMI just came out a year and a half ago. Yeah. And so we're in really great need for other clinicians in our field. I mean, we have a lot of clinicians that they see the vision, then they come and take the training. The challenge is that in our field, we tend to want all this research to be done. And that could take decades, take 20 years, 30 years. I ain't got time for that, man. I'm in my mid-40s. Like, I'll be gone by then, you know? So, like, we wanted to go out right now. And so whichever angle, if you know clinicians that could use this, that would benefit from understanding how to help people from their perspective, not what we think is a problem, but what their body is telling them is an issue. It's very non-pathologizing. It's very understanding of the human experience, because who doesn't have adversity, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if someone's listening, they're interested in learning more, how can they reach out to you?
Go to ariseAlliance.org. You can always email. We do free webinars for clinicians the first Wednesday of every month. But I'm happy to do a meeting, you know, Zoom or whatever. We can talk about how we can serve your organization. And we can do stuff virtually. We can go in person. You know, I prefer in person just because you could feel it's just more connected. But yeah, we're out to just help support our communities in the best way that we can. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, working a corporation or you were in behavioral health, you're still human and you still have to interact with other humans, and you want to be more effective. You want to be more efficient. You want to be able to really be at your best, because this really impacts our performance, our ability to be fully present. But how can you be fully present when you keep shoving parts of you back into the past because it's too uncomfortable to look at?
Well, fantastic. And I'll put the information to reach out to you on in my show notes as well.
Awesome.
Well, one last thing I would love to hear from you. So someone who's listening, maybe it's a clinician, maybe it's an officer, or maybe it's an individual that has struggled with in the past, maybe with their trauma, and maybe therapy, traditional talk therapy, hasn't really worked. What can you leave with us? One final thing that you can leave with us before we go.
I would say the wisdom is inside of you. Stop listening from here and start listening from here. You feel it, that constriction, the tension, or this like something feels off. Trust that. You can't logic your way through it. You have to experience it, because I look at the subconscious mind like a dark room. You can't see what's going on. So how do you get through a dark room? You have to feel your way through it. Right? So internally, you have to feel your way through it. So start being curious about that. If it feels too scary to go there, that's what a therapist is for. Someone who you feel safe with, regulated with, that can hold that space, almost like an anchor point, you know, with that little rope that you can follow back. But just start being curious with your responses. Not judgmental. I promise you, you are not broken. There is something that's happening within you that is telling you, hey, this is not our path. There's a better way to do this more efficiently. And so trust that. The answers are inside of you.
I love that. That's great. Trust your emotions. Trust you and your intuition. And don't beat yourself up over it. Don't judge yourself. Accept it and get the help if you need it. I love it. That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us with this new critical memory integration therapeutic approach. It sounds interesting. I think it's great. I'm glad that you're so involved in your community and you're wanting to train others. And I think that's fantastic. And hopefully others who are listening to this will reach out to you and learn more about that and how they can incorporate that into their practice as well.
And I just want to share, you know, I don't see myself as any better. I think everyone in our field has so much wisdom to bring and experience, and all our lives are different. Our experiences are different. So there's always more to learn. So I really want to share, you know, and learn alongside. Even when I do a training, I learn a lot more from my audience, just based on questions, based on responses or comments. And I really appreciate that time that we have together. So yeah, let's, you know, I'm looking for other people who want to join on this journey and just learn from each other and grow together and make an impact.
All right. Very good. Well, again, thank you for coming on the show and sharing with us. Maybe we can talk again sometime in the future.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, John.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I want to thank all of you who are listening or watching this episode of the Mental Health Today Show. I appreciate you. And as always, take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.